welcome to this week's episode of the Six Figure Success Club, where we are passionate about helping you build a successful business. Today, we are going to be joined by Michelle Cooper, who is the founder of Alchemy Accounting and Bookkeeping. And we're going to be talking all about how to take control of the finances in your business. Let's get into it. Michelle, do you want to just tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Absolutely. So my name is Michelle Cooper. I'm the founder and CEO of Alchemy Accounting and Bookkeeping. I'm also the host of the Rich Life Revolution podcast and the co-founder of Sacred Money School.
Got it all going on. I love that.
Got it all going on.
So when it comes to kind of the finances and the business, what has been your kind of experience working with other business owners? What's the kind of the feeling that they get or the kind of big gotchas that you work with them on? Kind of lay it out for us.
Yeah, well, the biggest thing that I see is that so many people start their business because they're passionate about something. They love, love, love doing something, right? They don't think about the money. They don't think about the financial part of the business. And it, you know, they'll kind of maybe do the minimum to get by or maybe not at all. And then something happens that makes them go, oh shit, right? Like I got to deal with this, right? What that something is often, you know, like a letter from the government saying, hey, you had to file your taxes, or they figure out, oh, like I don't have any money to pay my bills, or, you know, I've racked up a bunch of debt investing in my business and myself. Or it could be a conversation with a family member where they're like, hey, like, where's all the money from this great business that you are so passionate about working in? So then they realize like, oh, I've neglected this. Now the feeling is a really important piece, because the feeling can be guilt, shame, embarrassment, all of that, right? And that keeps them from getting help, because they feel like, oh, I need an accountant or I need a bookkeeper. I'm not good with money. I'm not good with numbers. Clearly I suck. And so they avoid it even more. They feel often rather intimidated by the kind of like finance professionals in this field. And so in my business, we're like, no judgment, no shame. Let's just get it done. It's really important to separate the situation from a meaning that they're creating about it, about themselves, because it doesn't actually mean anything about yourself.
I like that. I like the differentiation there. Like the money, so the finance side of the business is one thing. You are a completely separate kind of business entity.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And this is something I've definitely struggled with. If you were to ask me what one of my weakest skills was, I would say maths. Like numbers is not my area of expertise. I don't like numbers. Anything to do with words and writing, I'm all for it. But the numbers side of things, it's just nothing I've ever enjoyed doing. And I remember when I started my business, I hid from the numbers. Like they weren't something that I kind of worried about. And I didn't get myself into any kind of trouble, but I did realize that I needed to stop burying my head in the sand and take control of the finances in my business, so that I didn't get to the point where I got a letter from the government saying like your books are due, and then I would be like, I've got no idea what I'm doing. And I think that's something that's fairly common, is that business owners kind of shy away from it until it's almost too late.
Totally. Like I'm not good with words, to be honest, right? Like I'm a really slow reader, and you know, I hire professionals to help me write copy and stuff, right? So it's like it doesn't mean I'm, you know, a crappy person or, you know, whatever. It's just, words aren't my jam. Numbers are my jam, right? Yes. And so, you know, I had to go through my own experience of this to understand my client's experience of it, right? Like, I always say, like, I'm like the cobbler with no shoes, because I got myself into my own financial mess and chaos because I was so busy helping other people and growing my business that I was neglecting my own business and like that whole aspect. And so I totally get it, right? Like but I also had to learn, like, it doesn't mean anything about me. It's just a part of business, and we need help. Like, I'm not a lawyer. I need to hire a lawyer to write, I don't know, contracts or whatever, right? Doesn't mean anything about me. So why would it mean something about me if I have to get an accountant to prepare my taxes, or a bookkeeper to do my books, or a copywriter to write my copy, right?
Well said, yeah, because we're not all experts at everything. No one's good at everything. It's impossible. And
impossible.
It's perfectly okay for you to be good at the thing that you do in your business, whatever it is. So for me, it would be business strategy. And it's perfectly okay for you to not be okay at every aspect of running your business. Like, you're not expected to be an expert in every kind of column of the business.
Totally. Absolutely. Absolutely.
But I do find with money, it becomes more emotional than being not so great at other things. So let's take your writing example. Like, the idea of hiring a copywriter is really common, and people don't kind of associate that with being less, like, not as good at business or whatever it is. But when it comes to the finances side, I do find that there's a conception that if you're not good at the finance side of your business, you're a terrible business owner, and people get really emotionally invested in that. And I find that contrast really interesting.
Yeah, they do. And I from my own experience of working with hundreds of clients and my own personal experience, I feel like, you know, money is our kind of modern version of, like, survival of the fittest, right? Like, if you go back to, I don't know, like, caveman, it was like you had to be able to hunt and kill and farm land and stuff like that, right? And if you couldn't do that, well, you were just going to die, right? And in the world we live in now, money is the thing that, like, triggers that survival instinct. And that survival instinct is to keep us safe, right? So then we can create a lot of stories around that, right? And a lot of meaning. And it is very emotional because it's your very survival, right? And then there's all these things tied into it, right? Like supporting your family and, you know, and then, oh my God, you add the lens of social media on it, where you see people flying around the world in private jets and living on yachts and, you know, all zen on a beach while they got their laptop. Like, that is a whole other, like, lens that adds to that feeling of unworthiness, right? Like, if I'm not flying in a private jet, I'm a failure kind of thing, right? Which, not true. Right?
Not true. Everyone's version of success is different. Like,
you totally.
You don't want to be on, maybe you want to be on a private jet and you're not there yet, or you don't want to be on a private jet at all. Like, it's your version of success is completely different to everybody else's.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I also think the finances side kind of, it's almost synonymous with selling, which can be quite an emotional thing for people as well. Like, the idea of having to actually go out and sell your services, because people aren't, not everyone's a salesperson, like, and they can feel quite uncomfortable having to go out and ask for the money, which then ties into the financial side of the business, which then makes them more uncomfortable. And it becomes kind of this painful cycle of ignoring the important things in the business, which is getting sales and then looking after the revenue. And it just becomes this kind of negative cycle.
Yeah. Yeah. There is a lot, I think, involved in the whole thing around selling and, you know, you're putting yourself out there and you're asking for something, right? And I had a hard time with that at the beginning, because I don't know, I just felt weird. Like, in my career, I didn't ever have to sell anything, right? Like, you know, I was just there doing my job, and having to, you know, say, I'm really good at this, pay me for it, felt really weird, right? But I got to understand that it's an exchange of value, right? Like, I'm providing a value to you. And so the exchange is you're providing me money, right? And I had to get clear on that myself.
Definitely. I think that's the way people should approach sales. I've been in a corporate career in sales for the last 10 years. So it's what I've done all day, every day for a decade. So for me, sales comes really naturally. But I think that frame of mind is the right one to have, where you're not just asking somebody to give you money for something. It's you're providing a service. Like, if you don't tell them that you've got a service to solve their problem, they're not going to know that you've got a service that could solve their problem. And if you're providing that service, why should they expect you to do it for free? Like, no other business in the world does it for free. Like, if you go to Amazon, they're not going to give you free products. If you go to Apple, they're not going to give you free products. And it's the same sort of thing. But I think when you're a small business owner, that mindset is really different, and you almost feel like you should be giving it away for free, which is absolutely not the case, and you deserve to be paid for the service that you're offering.
I had to work with a coach on this to be like super honest and transparent, because I struggled with this part of my business. And, you know, I remember him saying, like, you know, you are somebody's knight in shining armor. Like, you are their solution, and they need you. Like, they want you. Like, they're losing sleep because they don't have you. So how can, that's almost like mean. Like, I was like, that's mean to like withhold that from people. Right. And then the whole thing around the kind of like, you know, asking for money and charging a fee and stuff, like, yeah, for sure. You know, you don't go to this grocery store and say, oh, I'll pay for my groceries later, or, you know, just walk out and not pay. And, you know, the thing that always caught me was friends or family doing the whole kind of like friends and family discount, or that I should do it for them for free, or like something like that. I remember watching somebody on a, I don't know, some kind of social media thing saying, like, those are the people that should want to support you and give you money. Like, those aren't the people, like, if a friend or a family member is of this mindset of like, you should do this for me for free because we're friends or family, that's not actually a great, you know, they're not valuing you. Right. And so that shifted me completely. I was like, light bulb, like, oh my God. Right. Like, my friends should want to do business with me. They should want to support my business and pay for that. Right.
Absolutely. So I have quite a controversial opinion on mates rates, in that I think your mates should be paying you more than your
more. Right.
They want you to succeed. Why would we pay you less? What you're worth. I think the mates rate should be that you pay like 150% of what it's actually worth to support your friend and their business.
Right.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, with the idea of mates rates being not right.
Right. Totally.
So let's say I'm a business owner. We'll take me from 3 years ago as an example. I was kind of hiding away from the finances of my business. What's the kind of least resistance thing I can start doing to really take control of the finances in my business? Because I think people look at it as if it's this huge thing, and that's what gets them kind of stuck in the sand. They ignore it for a little while, and it just kind of gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So if I'm in that position now, what can I kind of start doing that doesn't feel big and scary, but starts to help me get kind of under control?
Hire a bookkeeper.
Excellent. Simple. Outsource it.
Because honestly, a bookkeeper is not expensive, pretty cheap, right? Pretty reasonable, right? Doesn't have to cost you an arm or leg. If you hire a good one, right? Like, do an interview with people and ask questions, right? Like, who do you work with? You know, what is your average client? What's your response time to inquiries? How do you work with clients? Are you in a kind of virtual office environment, right? Like, you want somebody who is remote, can access your stuff. They can never want somebody that you got to go to their office or anything like that, right? Like, everything can be in the cloud. But it, like, this is the thing. I don't think you should have to learn this. I do think you don't abdicate it. So you want somebody who's going to help you understand it once they get the numbers together for you, right? That might be your bookkeeper. It might be somebody else. Who knows, right? But the whole kind of like churning of the data, outsource that. Because your time is worth more than 30, 50 ish dollars an hour, right? Even $100 an hour, your time's worth more than that. So to me, like, where I am in my business now is very different than, let's say, 10 years ago, right? 10 years ago, I had to learn a lesson, which was, if something cost me less than $100 an hour, because at the time I was charging $250 an hour to work with me, I need to outsource it. So I don't care what it is, because I'm making $150 an hour, right, on top of whatever I'm paying somebody to do it, right? And they're probably gonna do it faster than me as well. So
yeah, their area of expertise, right? So you trying to learn to do it is gonna take you a lot longer and end up costing you more money, because your time that you could have been charging $250 an hour, your time is gonna be spent trying to figure out what they could have done in less than an hour.
Yeah. Like I even had a client, you know, like upper six figures, right? About $750,000 in annual revenue at the time. And the bookkeeper had messaged me and said, hey, I'm not sure where to allocate this expense. This client went and purchased a MBA in 5-day program thing. It was like $20,000 or something, right? I'm like, what the hell? Like, what are you doing? So I knew this person personally. So I called her and I'm like, what are you doing? She goes, well, I need to learn how to, you know, read the numbers and the reports and stuff. I'm like, dude, for 20 grand, you could have hired a fractional CFO for half a year. Like, what are you doing? You're going to take 5 days out of your life. You own a Medi Spa. Like, you don't need an MBA. Like, you need to know how to do really great Botox and laser and all the jazz, right? So that you can make people look amazing. You don't need an MBA to do that. You need support, and you could have paid for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is exactly what I did. I ended up outsourcing. I think I found somebody that I like that kind of walks me through what the work that they've done and what the numbers mean, but I don't have to do it myself because
totally.
Going through invoices is not my idea of fun. Looking at numbers all day, also not my idea of fun. So I took a similar stance to you where I figured out that actually not wasting my time doing that and outsourcing it was the best thing for me because the person that I work with is so much better at it, is much right. more competent than I would be. There's less likely to be mistakes because if I'm going to try and do it myself, there's no way I'm going to do it perfectly because it's not something that I'm amazingly good at.
Well, there's also a risk factor there, to be honest, right? Like bookkeeping is a compliance-based service. You have to be compliant with your country's government standards or whatever, right? And so if you're a business owner and this isn't your jam kind of thing, it's not your area of expertise, if you don't know the tax code and all the things you need to know, you could make a mistake. And that mistake can actually cost you a lot of money, right? And time and energy and like add to a whole bunch of stress, right? I have a client who got a letter from the tax department and she's freaking out, right? And it's like, it's totally fine. We can handle this. Like, just give it all to us and we'll take care of it, right? It's not worth it. It really isn't.
Yeah, that peace of mind is essentially what you're paying for. The fact totally. That you don't have to worry about being compliant or following the law. Like somebody that's trained in it and does it all day, every day is going to do it for you.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, so as I said, that's what I did. I outsourced because it was the best thing for me to do for my business. And I think I agree with you that if it's not something that you're trained in, I think everybody should have. I think it's one of the first things that should be outsourced.
Absolutely. And it's cheap. This isn't like you don't pay somebody $300 an hour to do this, right? Like $100 an hour at the top end, right? And if you're you know, anywhere from like the zero to half a million, you can have a bookkeeper for at the most $50 an hour, right? And they'll be able to do a great job if they're a good bookkeeper. So
yeah, definitely.
Get it off your desk.
Absolutely. It's one less thing for you as the CEO to worry about. Because like, that's one thing I talk about quite a lot is becoming the CEO of your business as opposed to an employee of your business. And if you think about big CEOs, like they aren't doing the bookkeeping for their own business. Like they've got departments of people that are doing it for them. But as small business owners, it can feel challenging to delegate and to let go of control. And also there's the worry about investing in outsourcing. But I think in this case, I think the pros far outweigh the cons.
Yeah. And to be honest, if you're like, we talk about investing in your business. If you're investing in coaching support or professional development, anything like that, right? Those people that you're investing in, if they're worth their weight and, you know, whatever you're giving them, should be asking for your numbers. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have those, you know, if they're a business coach, they're going to want to know what your revenue is. They're going to want to know what your profit is. If you don't have those aren't necessarily the place to be investing your money in.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just something that we as business owners, I think, need to get a handle on. It's not something you can bury your head in the sand about, because how do you know if you've got a successful business if you don't know your numbers?
Totally.
Knowing what revenue is coming in versus what you're spending, like that's the quickest way to end up in a really difficult financial situation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, you can gather so much information from your numbers if they're accurate and detailed, right? Like, how profitable is this program or this service, right? Is my pricing right? Good thing to know, right?
Yeah. It's not just the business as a whole. It's each individual thing that you're selling. So if you've got multiple programs, how do you know that each one that you're investing time in and money in is profitable? If you're not doing kind of the numbers work in the background, you could be putting all of your effort into selling a program that actually is costing you more than you're bringing in.
Oh, totally. Honestly, like, this is one of the biggest things I've seen over the past, I don't know, 5 to 10 years, is clients doing things, right? Like, you know, pre-pandemic, it was more like big, what we call like revenue takedown events, right? Like 3-day big events cost a lot of money, lots of affiliate sales in there as a strategy, right? I had like several clients who ended up with like a, you know, a 6, sometimes a 7-figure product launch or program launch, and walking away with like under 20 grand profit.
Wow.
And it's like that top line revenue number really doesn't mean a lot if you're giving most of it away, mm-hmm. right? And they didn't get that piece, right? Like, they hadn't had that level of detail and the numbers before. And, you know, it was all about, you know, the big revenue numbers, which is great, right? We need big revenue numbers, but we have to look at how we're getting that revenue, mm-hmm. right? So... And then, of course, there's the ongoing cost of running the business and delivering the service, right?
Yeah.
These things have to be looked at, right? It's if even if, let's say you did a launch and you had a 50% cost because you had some affiliate sales, you had some ad fees and all that stuff. You walked away, let's say you did a $500,000 launch and you walked away with $250,000. That $250,000 has to pay for running the program, which might be you, but might involve other people, right? It also has to pay for like the next, however long, 6 months, year, I don't know, whatever long your program is or whatever, right? Of expenses. And people don't think that.
Yeah, it's not just the paying for the like the launch at the time. It's how long does that have to last you until kind of like your next launch?
Right?
Taking those sorts of things into account. Are you going to be launching every month to cover the expenses every month? Like, can't just rely on the money from that one launch.
Totally. And you know, one of the things that I was helping a client understand recently, because she was really like really focused on the pay in fulls, right? So she's a coach, she has a large business, right? 7-figure business, but well, upper 6-figure, almost 7-figure. And she was like, well, you know, we want to push the pay in full. I'm like, do you? Because what happens is you pull in all that money and you spend that money. Mm-hmm. And then you have to pay 7 coaches to run this program. Whereas if you push the payment plan, sure, there's a percentage that will always fail out, right, of a payment plan. But long term, you're building sustainability in the business. Right. And that's what we want to do. We want to do both. It's not one or the other. If there's a tip that anybody takes from this, is to build both into your business. Big drops of revenue are great, but the most sustainable businesses are a subscription model, membership, something like that, payment plans, because you get long-term, consistent monthly revenue. Right.
And also, you don't want to have to rely on the live launches, because they take so much effort and energy. And if you're having to do one of those every month to make the revenue that you need to run the business and to live, that's a really draining way to run the business. So yeah, you're completely right. We need a mixture between the monthly recurring revenue, but whether that's via subscription or evergreen products, whatever it is, and then do like the big cash injections with the live launches throughout the year at the same time.
Yeah, for sure. That's the best thing to do.
So I would love to get your opinion on if we've got somebody that's listening that is kind of looking at the health of their business, what's the best way, or what's the way that you would suggest for them to understand how healthy financially their business is at the moment?
Okay, so Know your revenue, right? And where it comes from. Okay, this is a really important piece. I see this all the time. People just dump, even bookkeepers will just dump all the revenue into a category called sales. Don't do that. Have what makes sense to you. Now, the important thing to know is your books are telling, like your numbers are telling a story, but your books need to be at a level of detail that tells you the right information, right? So in my business, for example, we have revenue split between recurring bookkeeping, annual kind of projects, right? Like it could be tax returns or things like that. And then other recurring income. We have a membership, we have, you know, like a mastermind and stuff like that, right? So that's other income. And then we have project revenue. So that tells me how much money is coming in total, but the percentage based on those different categories, right? Now in my business, the most sustainable line of revenue is monthly bookkeeping. It goes on forever, right? It always comes in every month. And if I know that we have, let's say, 100K coming in a month, I have enough money to pay all the bills.
Yeah.
Right? Everything else is gravy. Right? That's awesome. The next thing to know is how much is it costing you to deliver on your services? So this is called cost of goods sold, right? That would be any people who actually deliver on the services. So in my business, it's bookkeepers or CPAs, right? It's not your overhead people, right? It's just delivering the services. If there's software that you need to pay for in order to deliver the service, not like marketing software or something like that, like in my business, that would be QuickBooks Online or Dex or something like that, right? That goes in there. Processing fees go in there, right? Process things through Stripe or PayPal or whatever, those go in there. And then that will give you your gross profit. Mm-hmm. You never want your gross profit to go below 50%, ever. I don't care what kind of business you're in, right? If you're a one-man show, it should be way higher, right?
Yeah.
If you've got a good size business, like if your gross profit is below 50%, there's work to do in your cost of goods sold. And that might mean that your pricing needs to go up, right? So total revenue divided by revenue stream, and then the total cost of goods sold will give you your net profit or your gross profit, right? And then everything else is your overhead. Now, the important thing within your overhead is client acquisition costs. How much is it costing you to acquire your clients, regardless of what you do? Ads, networking, client gifts, all that stuff, right? Acquiring your clients and keeping them, like your nurture campaign, all that. That means your marketing, email marketing software, anything like that, right? Could be going to events, right? I go to a lot of events because I like to be in person with people and talk to people. So that's a client acquisition cost for me, right? So what is that? Know that, right? And it depends on your business as to how much that should be, right? If your service or product, it's all different, right? Know that. And then what's your total overhead payroll? So that's your
yourself and your staff.
Yeah, yourself and your staff, whoever that is, whether that's even if it's a contractor, it doesn't have to be an employee, right? Like that's your bookkeeper, it's your VA, it's your whatever, customer service person. What's that, right? That shouldn't be like, if you take you out of it, right? That overhead payroll shouldn't be more than 10% at the most, right? Just take you out of it. But you want to know what you're paying yourself to. And then your net profit.
The
difference between your gross profit and all of your expenses. And it, again, depending on your level of business, as your business grows, your net profit usually goes down because it costs more to run your business, right? So my business was way more profitable when we were under like $500,000. It was like when I looked at the numbers, it was something like an 85% net profit when I was making $300,000 a year.
Yeah.
To like 5% net profit at a seven-figure business.
Right? Yeah, the revenue obviously is higher that you're bringing in, so the
percentage is low to run that business.
Yeah,
it's definitely. Not. I can't do it by myself, so you have got to decide on what makes sense for you. But those are the key metrics that you want to know, and get support in understanding what they mean, right? Because they're always telling a story. That's the thing.
And again, it comes back to, I think, even if you outsource all of it, you've got a bookkeeper, you've got an accountant, understanding those hot, higher level figures is really important. You can't leave that to the people that you've outsourced it to. Like, you as the business owner need to know the level of profitability, what the business is costing you, what the forecast is for the next 6 months. That sort of thing has to be owned by you. You absolutely can get support from other people with the kind of day-to-day figuring out of the metrics and what that means, but you need to own those numbers and what they mean so that you know how successful your business is.
Yeah, like, don't, I always say, like, you don't, you can outsource this, but you don't abdicate the responsibility of it, right? So you, it's fine to get somebody else to churn the data and stuff, but you need to take ownership of this part. Don't abdicate it to other people. I don't care what level of business you're in. And look at the numbers as percentages. That's often an easier way for people to understand, oh, it's costing me 50% of my revenue to deliver. Maybe my pricing needs to go up.
Yes, I love that. I've also seen a really cool trend on social media at the moment, which is like working out how many hours you would have to work to fulfill whatever it is that you're thinking of doing. So whether it's launching a program or signing up with a new coach, like, how many hours would you have to put in to make back that revenue, which I think is a really cool way of helping people to understand the investment that they're putting in.
Totally, totally. I think that's fun. There's so many things you can do in that kind of area, looking at converting things to hours. Like, I was working with a client who was like, I want to add $500,000 to our revenue. And I'm like, okay, so in your business, that, you know, your kind of like charge out fee on average is $100 an hour, and that gives you a 50% profit. That's 5,000 hours.
Wow.
So 5,000 hours divided by 40 hours a week. That's, I think it was like six people she needed to hire.
Oh my goodness.
And I'm like, she's like, what? And she was like, I can't do that. I'm like, yeah, I know. Like, it's because we get focused on the revenue, right? Yeah. Like, I want to add $500,000 this year. Okay, that's great. But here's what that means.
And then, right, the cost of having those six people, so that $500,000 is very quickly.
So let me tell you, recruiting six people, right? Like, you got to do like all the recruitment costs, the advertising, the interviewing costs. Right now, what I see, at least in North America, for every three people that people hire, one works out. That's a lot of lost wages.
Yeah.
Right. So these are things, these are like conversations for you to have, regardless of where you're at in your business, as a CEO, right? And you need somebody who can help you understand this in a way that makes sense to you.
Yeah, definitely. And it is that kind of little reframe, isn't it? Finding ways that make sense in your head. So is it comparing it to the number of hours that you need to work? Is that what's going to help you kind of understand what money in versus money out looks like?
Totally. Yeah, absolutely.
Love that. And just based on your expertise, is there anything else that you would share with the audience around the finances and their business and things that they should be thinking about?
Yeah, well, you know, like I said, accurate, detailed financial records are the foundation of everything, right? So a level of detail that makes sense to give you the data that you need to see, right? Or that the person, maybe you're working with a business coach or a consultant, that they want to see, right? Data can be sliced in a gazillion ways, right? So get the lens that makes sense for you and your business. You know, it might be identifying a problem, maybe, and your financial records can tell you what that problem is. Is it client acquisition? Is it overhead? I don't know, right? Like, get clear on that, get support. Don't abdicate this to anyone. It's part of your growth. It's part of your journey. I'm sure we all can agree, like, entrepreneurship is the biggest personal growth thing you can ever do in your life, right? It will push all your buttons. Mm-hmm. And so be okay with it. Be okay with not being okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that should be the motto of entrepreneurship, be okay. Right?
Like, we're not going to be okay most of the time, to be honest, right? So, like, just be okay with that, right? Like, okay.
Yeah,
there's all, no one knows everything, right? Like, you just got to be okay with it and roll with the punches and find the right people to support you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's been lovely chatting to you.
Thank you for having me. It's awesome. I love this conversation.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. My three key takeaways for today would be to take control of the finances in your business. So you need to have a good grasp of what's going in and what's coming out and how much the business is costing and what the profit is. So don't bury your head in the sand. It's only going to become a bigger problem. Now, the second takeaway, which will help with that, is to outsource. So if, like me, numbers isn't your forte and it's not something you're super comfortable with, look at outsourcing to a bookkeeper or an accountant, because they are trained in this. It's what they do all day, every day. It's their area of expertise. They will help you understand what needs to be done so that the business is kept legal on the financial side, and they'll make it a lot less overwhelming for you. And then the third one is to keep control of the revenue and the profit numbers in the business. So you need to understand how much profit you're making, what's costing you how much money, how profitable each of your products are, and that's not something that you should be completely handing off to someone that you're outsourcing to. So the day-to-day management of the finances and the accountancy side, absolutely outsource that, but make sure that you have a firm grip and understanding of what profit you're making in the business and what's coming in and what's going out. Thank you so much for tuning in. I will see you next time.